The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live.
In a secret lab, somewhere in the Western Hemisphere, the perfect human specimen has been born. He has the strength of 10 men and the wisdom of 20.
Rick Munn.
Now you listen here. He's a very naughty boy.
TNT Radio.
Now go away.
Yes, it's all good. My grand gives me an awful hard time about putting on weight. Good thing is I'm going to meet him next week. Next Wednesday night, and me and him are going to go and have a conversation, and he can tell me what he thinks about my physical appearance in the parking lot, and let's hope he makes it back to Australia in one piece. Anyway, it's all good. Mike, I love you to bits. Mwah! And I'm really, really looking forward to meeting you and your dear lady. Next week, all being well as the TNT posse, I believe Darren will be there, Katie will be there, Patrick will be there, Natalie will be there, James will be there, and maybe some other people. And if I've forgotten anyone, I apologize. But yeah, it'll be good to physically meet these people after just communicating on a screen for the last year and 4 months. Flipping heck, it's almost been a year and a half now. I can't believe it. Time is flying by. This is Locked and Loaded. This is TNT Radio. We are beaming it live at ya right now from an undisclosed location in the Gold Coast in Australia. So it's all good. Later on in this hour, I have Francis O'Neill joining me for the first time. Always nice to speak to some new blood here. Although it's not his first time on TNT Radio, I am very looking forward to seeing what he has to say this morning on many topics, so stay tuned for that one. Darren will be joining me in a minute or two, just as I do, perusing, seeing what's happening in the world at the moment. I saw this morning as I do my morning walk, head into town, go for a coffee, I pass several nursery schools, and there's always carloads of mothers and van loads of kids waiting to go into the school. And this morning I've seen many of them being sprayed by these hand sanitizers. The assistants were cleaning the kids' hands before they even got to school. The mothers were squirting the gel onto the hands, and the kids were rubbing their hands and all that. It's good to be hygienic, don't get me wrong, but muck and dirt don't hurt. Germs will do you good, if you believe in germs, that is. You like nuclear weapons, it's a very touchy subject, or the earth being flat, or sausage roll shaped. But either way, hygiene is good from time to time, but it's also good just to let nature run its course in your body. And as it came in there, there's apparently a holding page going up on social media for parents that are just about to give birth or have given birth, and they're giving instructions to visitors. So this is an example. Our sweet baby is arriving soon, and we have a few requests that we hope you will respect to help our baby get the best start in life. Number one, make sure you're up to date with your whooping cough vaccine, at least ideally 2 years ago. No kisses on baby, please. That includes hands, feet, face, etc. Germs are big. Baby is small. Don't be offended if you can't meet baby until later. We prefer virtual visits at the beginning. Don't smoke. Wear clean, smoke-free clothes. No perfume. No strong scents. If you have the cold, stay away. Respect, our family will be spending weeks bonding with new addition. Sleep will be precious, so always check before, as we will be spending a lot of time resting. Don't stay too long. And make sure your hands are clean if you want a cuddle. If that doesn't put you off wanting to go and see baby, I don't know what will. I don't see the fascination with visiting babies. They all look the bloody same. They all wah, 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 and crap in their nappies, and they stink a little bit. That's just the way it is, you know. I get it. They're beautiful and all that, but your kid is very important to you. But in reality, no one's really paying attention to your little bundle and how much sleep you're getting and whether you want smoke-free clothes, etc., etc. It's called common sense. It's a little bit patronizing to tell people not to smoke or have smoky clothes over a baby or come and see it when you've got the cold or an infection. That's common sense. So maybe they won't get any visitors after that. And maybe that's what they wanted. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what they wanted. Because when there's a little bundle of joy in the house for the first month, 2 months, 6 months, 2 years, sleep deprivation's a real thing. And by the way, it's a form of torture sanctioned by the American government. The CIA used sleep deprivation as an actual torture method. All night, every night. Brings back memories of being tortured when I was a young father. But anyway, there you go. Choose to go, choose not to go. It's all good. I'm just having a little joke here. I've got a funny sense of humor, but of course I love all children and you all love your children, etc., etc., etc. Just to make you aware that we have a website, tntradio.live. Leave your thoughts, opinions, comments, suggestions, etc. Feedback on the website. I'm saying etc. a lot this morning, etc., etc. It's a little bit annoying. Sometimes I hook on to a word and an expression and I thrash it to death. The day's expression is etc. So sorry if that triggers anyone, etc., etc. Stay tuned. This is TNT Radio, etc.
Stay up to date through your workday.
I stream it at my desk.
This is today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Okay, Darren Denslow, the Janner himself. I'm a little bit exasperated this morning in a good way. I feel like I've dumped a lot of baggage on the air this morning and I'm feeling a little bit light and limber and a little bit optimistic, Darren. What do you think?
Oh, I'm back to ruin your optimism then, Rick, because I've got a whole variety of Ukraine-Russia conflict stories. And every time I put a story together, all of a sudden some commentary comes my way and it sort of cements... That's a word I've used twice today. Some of the thoughts and commentary I've heard elsewhere. So I'm just going to run through some headlines and then we'll focus on what I think is actually important. And it relates to the woke religion. So British PM or a British selected WEF PM, Rishi Midget Sunak, has shot down calls for a ceasefire in Ukraine, declaring that Kiev should keep fighting for as long as it takes to get the peace it deserves. Ukraine's British and American backers have rejected calls for peace on multiple occasions. They called the Chinese 12-point plan disturbing. 12-point peace plan disturbing. Bit odd. I don't know how a peace plan could be disturbing, and it's a good one. But also, the South African President Cyril Ramaphosa has recently put together a team of other African nations. They managed to even speak to Putin Zelensky. They came up with a peace plan. No, it's been approved by the UN and the Pope. And Jeremy Corbyn asked a question himself, Mr. Peace himself. No peace is not an option in Ukraine. U.S. Air Force Chief Frank Kendall has poured cold water on claims that F-16s will have a significant impact on helping Ukraine defeat Russian forces. They won't be a game changer. They'll get blown up on arrival. And even if they don't, they haven't got anyone to fly them. And there are lots of rumors circulating now. We'll come back to the plane story that US and NATO pilots may very well get involved in the conflict because Ukraine does not have the manpower or the skill base to operate these fourth generation airplanes that will be less than zero match for the integrated Russian defenses, air defenses that the Russian motherland has and what they've secured or put in place in eastern Ukraine, which I'd like to remind people is now Russia. Yeah. Eastern Ukraine is Russia. We keep calling it Eastern Ukraine, but it's not. They voted to be part of Russia. Also, finally, there have been Ukrainian saboteur groups, terrorist-type groups that have infiltrated Russia's Belgorod region. They have left at least 8 civilians wounded, but no civilians were killed. The Russians are on it. So the Ukrainian, probably with the backing of USA and NATO, are now going into what we would officially call Russia, the Belgorod regions, and other far eastern or far western parts of Russia, far eastern parts of Ukraine, across the border. They're going into towns and cities and carrying out terrorist-type activities. This morning, I got a comment sent to me. It's from John Helmer, an expert on Ukraine and Russia, worked very closely with George Eliason, TNT sort of war correspondent. He says there is a grave risk in 3 weeks' time US and NATO forces will attempt a direct combat against Russia. The operational plan is to strike from Romanian airspace in the south and the Baltic states in the north in camouflage of the NATO exercise called Air Defender 23 under cover of US F-16 fighter aircraft reported operated by Ukrainian pilots, but fueled, directed, and guarded by more than 200 US and NATO aircraft, including the most advanced US air warfighter, the F-35. The exercise Air Defender 23 is the largest deployment exercise of air forces in NATO's history and demonstrates transatlantic solidarity. It starts on June the 12th and met up to 10,000 exercise participants from 25 nations. So that's coming up at the beginning of June. There's a massive air defense exercise. Yeah, so it's not threatening to Russia at all. And so this is coming at the beginning of the month. I feel things are really, really ramping up in Ukraine and Russia. Rick, I think it's good. Now that the ground is hardened, there is going to be a lot more what we might see it think of as real war combat. And I do fear that the US, the UK and NATO are going to get directly involved, especially if they're sending those planes. Because if they want Ukrainian pilots, when are these planes even going to get into use? Yeah, it's not even going to get into use for months and months and months. And so they're useless unless we have our own pilots flying them. And then finally, all of this, what I've just said, matches up to what I've been listening to from Colonel McGregor. I take him as sort of my honest source. I hope he isn't controlled up for the Americans or anything. But he said this, Putin ain't buffing. But the problem Putin has is that the war against Russia from the US is ideological. It's about spreading the woke religion. It's about spreading all the LGBTQ nonsense, as he said. And that these people are crazy, absolutely crazy. Behind the scenes of Biden's administration, behind the curtains, they are religious fruitcakes. And so we have a real dangerous situation that we haven't really, or I haven't really discussed in enough detail. We've got a man who ain't going to bluff, and we've got a bunch of crazy rainbow-haired warriors that have effectively a doomsday machine at their disposal. What could possibly go wrong, then?
Well, here's the thing. Just to pick up on a couple of the points that you raised there, the F-16s, for example, there's a lot of things being done that the average consumer of media propaganda will think on the surface, hey, I think I saw a picture of Kamala Harris standing in front of an F-16, an American flag in the background, saluting all the brave people that were going to be there. But they're ultimately talking about training up people to fly these. Now, call me old-fashioned, but, you know, even if you've watched Top Gun, you know, one or two, you know, you don't just rock up the training academy, hop in, and it's not like taking driving lessons, you know, put your L plate up. What are they going to fly with L plates for the first 6 months and then pass a test, the theory test? Okay, you're being attacked by a MiG and there's a Sidewinder missile coming at you. What do you do? A, pull up. B, do a roll. Or C, pray and eject from the cockpit. You know, what do they think? What mug is going to step up to be a voluntary F-16 pilot and go up against the Russian anti-air missile barrages and or the Russian Air Force? That's the first thing. Secondly, Crimea. There's been a lot of talk over the last few days about Crimea being a legitimate target because it's not part of Russia. You know, they've said again, they've said, yeah, that's what I mean. So they've said, listen, please be under no illusion. If you attack Crimea, it's an attack on Russia. You might as well bomb the Kremlin. And I know there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and if you've rightly said, how do you know what to trust? Who do you know what to trust? We do have people on the ground. George Eliason, for example, who lived in Donbass for years and is now based in Russia. Patrick Henningsen, who's been covering this for donkey years. They are legitimate, I would say trustworthy sources, and they seem to say the same thing, that this is, they're looking to, NATO is looking to escalate. Russia is looking to de-escalate to the point where it's almost sneezed at or laughed at, even the thought of a peace plan being put into place. What right-minded individual would want to wage war when they can negotiate some kind of peaceful settlement? I think that says a lot about both sides if you look at it from the outside, yeah, as an outsider looking in. What do you think?
Yeah, yeah. George Larson is still in the Donbass, but he—that's Russia. Yeah, so Ukraine, yeah, most of eastern Ukraine has voted to be a part of Russia, and Russia's trying to say this is part of our country. Mm-hmm. And I kept saying, "Oh, you're in Ukraine, George," mm-hmm, and he would promptly pick me up for being geographically incorrect now. And this is the point: firing into eastern Ukraine is now firing into Russia. But they're not telling the public that. They're saying it's eastern Ukraine. We want to get Ukraine back. No. It's Russia. And the fact that any opportunity for peace talks is immediately dismissed as disturbing just goes to show you that our side wants war. And I think, even if they are going to supply F-16s, and there's rumors that they're going to supply American pilots to pilot them and NATO pilots, we are going to go directly into conflict with Russia. It's being pushed by ideological reasons in the US. Crimea and that southern region, that's all they keep talking about targeting it. Putin's literally said, you target Crimea, we're going to nuke you. Yeah, he's literally told you that he's going to do that. And still the rhetoric is there. We'll see what happens with this Air Defender 23 NATO exercise. It's the largest of its kind. And it's going to be right off Russian borders.
It's ongoing, and it doesn't look like it's going the right way, but we will of course be keeping an eye on this as it develops, literally day to day, if not week on week. So many thanks for bringing this one up, Darren, and getting the focus back on something that's going to affect us all, whether we like it or not. That's Darren Denslow. I'm Rick Munn, and hopefully in a minute or so we will be joined by Francis O'Neill, so please don't go away. This is TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's Rick Munn.
The election in Turkey. Apparently, Twitter, they're saying this themselves, by the way. They said they were approached by the Turkish government last week, and they were told, they made it clear that Twitter was the only social media service not complying in full with existing court orders, and that they would be, they would be strangled if they didn't suppress some accounts and remove some tweets. So they did it. And I suppose, the arguments there, they just complied. It was either that or get completely taken off for the entire country. So maybe they sacrificed a few people. Now you can get into the ins and outs of that as well. But one thing that's very important here to bear in mind, and this isn't about Twitter or Elon Musk or anybody else, but be under no illusion here. Even if you do get completely free and unrestricted speech, no suppression or shadow banning with algorithms on Twitter, and Elon Musk delivers all of that, the rules that are being brought in by Ofcom, for example, will say, okay, Elon, you can give all your users freedom of speech and freedom of reach and whatever, but if we are regulating you as a platform in the United Kingdom, for example, and you mess us around, we can pull the plug on your platform.
Rick Munn is locked and loaded on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
I'll be here to hear what's on your mind.
Kids want to share what's going on in their lives with the adults around them. Parents, grandparents, teachers, coaches, and more. They want to know you're listening, and they want to listen to you. They want your input and guidance, early and often, on all kinds of topics. When it comes to a serious subject like underage drinking, they want to know your expectations, as well as how and why, as a young person, they should avoid alcohol. How you talk about it will change as your child grows, but the important thing is to talk about it. Not just once for an hour when you think the time is right, but in 60 one-minute conversations and more that are part of your everyday talks. For more information about talking with your kids about underage use of alcohol and other drugs, visit underagedrinking.samhsa.gov.
When you need me, I'll be by your side.
Put his guys.
This is today's News Talk Radio.
You guys suck.
He's locked and loaded.
Does that mean I can use tongue?
Rick Mon on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Shaking of heads, smiling, wry smiles abound. I'm really happy to be joined for the first time on Locked and Loaded by the one and only Frances O'Neill. Frances, our studio operator, thought you were a girl. They think Frances is a girly name, and it is in some parts of the world, but I thought, no, this guy is definitely a male, and I used to work with a guy called Frances O'Neill, but it's not you. I'm very happy to have you on the show here today, by the way. You come very highly recommended by my old sparring partner, Darren Denslow, and I don't know what to expect here. I kind of wing it, as I'm sure you do too from time to time, so we're just going to go with the flow with today's conversation. Frances, by the way, is an activist. He's a great writer. He's a commentator, and he has a lot to say. So first and foremost, welcome to the show. How are you doing today, good sir?
I'm very well, thanks, Rick. Thanks for having me on. I guess you can never be too sure who's a man and a woman these days anyway, so...
You can't. And even if it's obvious to look at, I could misgender you and end up in court or lose my job or, who knows, attacked by a rabid blue and pink haired crowd. We don't know. That's part of life, isn't it?
Yeah, because of my name, I've been being misgendered before it was cool. So, yeah. One of those things.
He's a guy. I think he's a guy anyway, and I hope he doesn't take me to court for saying that. Frances, you can connect with him, by the way, on social media if you use it. On Twitter, at Frances, FrancisX O'Neill, O-N-E-I-L-L. My next door neighbors are the O'Neills as well. It's a good Irish name you've got there. And also, he has a rather tasty Substack page, which I want to dip into today, some of the content that he's been putting out. It's francisoneill.substack.com. I suppose that's a good place to start as any, given that you've put a lot of time and effort into writing various pieces here. One thing, I suppose we'll kick off with this just briefly. One of the pieces you wrote on the 7th of May is the freedom movement together from marches to media? And that's something that Natalie Teal's very big on. She's my partner in crime for our talkback hour in the first hour of the show. She's seeing a lot of splintering, a lot of elitism, a lot of people who are talking crap and people are sucking it all up. The gist of that article is the freedom movement together. A, do we actually have a freedom movement? And B, if we do, is it unified at this time? What do you say?
Well, in regards to that Substack, I woke up with 9/11. So for quite a few years, I used to make memes because I thought you have to bring humor into it and you have to get the message across very quickly. And you want people to... who are unwilling to listen to unavoidably encounter the information in some way and make it humorous. But in recent times, I've been trying to speak to people that I know about these things. And I was being dismissed because I was suggesting that there's a possibility of controlled opposition, which if you've followed events like, for example, through the 9/11 truth movement or anything really, any counter state narrative gets infiltrated in some way. So I felt these ideas are more complex and we had to explore them in a bit more depth. So I'm kind of reluctant. I want to get on with other things. You know, we all want to get on with our lives, but there's in the background, we're fighting a war that people don't seem to have any sense of. So I started looking at explore in more detail in a written form, looking at these people that seem to be leading what we're calling the movement, because the movement initially wasn't led in some ways. It just emerged out of dissatisfaction with lockdowns, right? So we had, and that was the biggest demonstration of our strength, was when there was hundreds of thousands, possibly millions, it's really hard to put a figure on it, marching through streets in London, and they happened all over the world, obviously, in different sizes. They were in Dublin, they were in Melbourne, Sydney, Canberra, all over the place. People have Madrid, you know, there was everywhere. So what I'm concerned about is the fact that people have come in now and become figureheads who weren't there in 2020, who didn't warn us. In fact, some of them did the opposite. And they've now got this kind of position in a hierarchy where they're being listened to. And what's really curious about is that some of the people being listened to or being amplified by the media and appearing on these kind of Joe Rogan shows or even the BBC, you know, they're not singing from the same hymn sheet as the people who are on the street were singing, or they seem to tone down the message. Or and in contrast to that, people who were there, who were qualified, who were vocal, who have paid the price, are not featured on the media. You know, when we're talking about eminent medics like, you know, Sukarat Bakdi, instead he's on trial for, you know, for a hate speech in Germany for trying to warn people. So it just seems to me there's got to be a cause for questioning, right? People don't have to agree with everything. They can and every case you take on an individual basis, and people are so contradictory, and it just generally, you know, even in your own life, you'll encounter people who refuse to take evidence from you, who refuse to accept that the world is anything other than they previously thought it to be. That it's very hard to pin people down. Nobody comes out and tells you, oh yeah, I'm an agent of the state, or I'm a, you know. But to put this into even more context, just the last little thing I'll say here is that before all this happened, you know, in the 90s, up until 2010, the London Metropolitan Police here in England, they put officers so deep undercover with animal rights activists that they had children with them. They were in they're essentially married. You know, they weren't officially married, but they were living like man and wife. They had kids with them. And that's the length that the state was going undercover for animal rights activists, some of whom were just standing outside McDonald's giving leaflets. They were trying to infiltrate maybe bigger operations. But so in the context of this epic struggle between good and evil, between humanity and anti-humanity, we have to consider the possibility that some of the figures they put in front of us are there not to lead us, but to mislead us.
Do you know what, actually, I've been watching different things over the last, at night I kind of delve into old documentaries about, you know, historical events. That's what I occupy myself with in the evening times now. And this deep infiltration thing, we've got to take a very, very quick news break now, but when we come back from it, you mentioned Sukarat Bakdi, I'm thinking about Thomas Blinder as well. I'm thinking about the real hardcore no-nonsense voices that were loud and prominent from the start. They seem to be still suppressed to a degree or on trial, whereas the late to the party people, the people that have had their so-called revelations now and done their about turns, they seem to be giving a more prominent platform. And what lengths will the state go to infiltrate movements? What lengths will they go to? I want to touch on that one as well. So please, listeners, stay tuned. We'll be back in about 1 minute here after the break, and we'll discuss this further on TNT Radio.
Now, TNT Radio News.
Show them how it's done.
Let's go.
I got news for you.
News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. A sabotage group from Ukraine has breached the Russian border and launched a surprise attack on Russia's Belgorod region. Former US President Donald Trump is taking the Washington Post to court over its recent hit piece on his social media site Truth Social. And new polling out of the United States shows mainstream media outlets have failed to sell Washington's narrative on just about everything.
Rick Moss.
I'm terribly sorry.
On TNT Radio.
Okay, Francis, you mentioned Sukarat Bakdi. I'm looking at Thomas Blinder as well. Other figures, you wrote a piece on Andrew Brigden, or however people want to pronounce him. Some people think he's some kind of messianic figure who's coming along unchanged and he's leading the charge. But you did a deep dive into various, financial irregularities and scrutiny that was already underway there. Was it a case of a rat jumping from a sinking ship? I haven't paid him that much attention. I, to be honest, I'm not putting my faith in any people, any public figures. I kind of trust the people that I know in my real life and that I've walked the walk with rather than just talked to talk with. But is there too much emphasis being placed on the Johnny-come-latelys or the Joanna-come-latelys rather than the original truth talkers and the original flag wavers? Do you think there's too much emphasis placed on these people that are waking up now?
Well, I suppose the argument against saying there's too much emphasis on them is that if you get someone like Dr. Asim Malhotra or Andrew Bridgen and they have this kind of eminence that your lay people will listen to rather than say you or me, which they wouldn't listen to, or they have the qualifications, one's an MP and one's a cardiologist, then perhaps they push the message further into the mainstream. And so that's very helpful. The question is then just what do they do with it? Now, both of those figures are looking to raise money. Andrew Bridgen now is looking to raise money for a defamation case against Matt Hancock, which superficially gives the crowd, we all want to have a stick with which to beat Matt Hancock. But the problem is he's doing it for defamation. And apparently there's a low chance of success with that because of freedom of speech laws. If Matt Hancock has the opinion that Andrew Bridgen is something, he's entitled to hold that opinion, right? And so there's a good chance if he raises the £250,000 he's looking for, that he'll lose, and that will be paid either to lawyers' fees or to damages to Matt Hancock. And I don't think people are probably aware of that. So that's problematic. Malhotra now is looking to raise money for a documentary film. Now, the problem with the film, and with probably both these financial, you know, solicitations, is that they come too late. So, like, if you're making a documentary film about the problems with the vaccines, well, that's 2 years too late, because most people have taken as many of those vaccines as they wish to take. Yeah. And the if you're going to attack Matt Hancock, it would have been very useful if he'd have done it in 2020 or 2021. But he's not even in the government. He's been forced out. He's been sacked for not obeying his own restrictions. But there's always question marks. Now, it's easy to sit like me and in the background and snipe at people. So, and I don't know what's in their hearts or in their minds. Uh-huh. But I think people have to be cautious, especially if they're taking your money and your energy and your time for projects that maybe are not as helpful as they might be. And the last thing I say is, Bridgen is saying that if he wins his defamation case, he'll give the money to the vaccine injured. But if you've got £250,000, you could give it directly to them.
Correct.
So Bridgen has also joined a party called the Reclaim Party, which has only fielded three candidates in the past 2 or 3 years, in contrast to the Freedom Alliance, which has fielded about 200 in the past year, and a Heritage, which has done about 75, which don't get media attention. And they have a donor who gave them £5 million. So if there's 5 million plus the 250,000 swilling around that they could help people with, and instead they're looking to get it from the public. And whilst the government has masses of money for advertising, billions it used to propagandize this so-called pandemic. Uh-huh. The opposition obviously needs money. If we had a billboard campaign or a television campaign, it uh-huh. would be helpful. So money is sometimes required for opposition. So it's not just, oh, if he's asking for money, he's bad. But yeah, you have to look at what they're asking it for and why. Yeah,
you do. And I'm finding as well, one thing that surprises me, sadly, I spend a little bit too much time observing social media because it's part of my job. So I have to be up to date with what opinions, views, and breaking stories are. But there seems to be a real acceptance, people taking people at their word only. So if someone makes a statement that's a prominent figure, they say, look, I turn my back on this. I distance myself from this. I'm against this now. It's like, well, he said it, so it must be true. But, you know, I've used the example here and I'll do it again on air. I can now say, for example, and I don't mean this, but I'll say it sincerely, I believe what I've been talking about on air for the last 18 months has been misleading people. I'm an anti-vaxxer. I'm sorry about that. I encourage people to go out and get their jabs. Klaus Schwab is not a bad guy. Bill Gates is not a psychopath. And Jeffrey Epstein never got involved in child trafficking. I recant it all. That's crap. I'm talking crap, but it's just words. And as much as you should discount my words, meaningless, the same thing should apply to these so-called messianic figures that are coming out now, like Pied Piper types, that people are following them down God knows what roles. And you talked about infiltration. I don't know if you've, obviously where I live, I grew up in the Troubles over here. There was a lot of collusion, you know, paramilitary groups, the special services, MI5, MI6, everything. There was an operative, one of the highest ranking agents of the British government in the IRA was a guy called Freddy Scapatici, went under the name of Steak Knife. I don't know if you know anything about him, do you?
No, not really, vaguely. I'm aware that they basically fought themselves in the trouble sometimes.
Well, let me say this, just to give you an eye-opener, I'll recommend you, go to YouTube and go Agent Steak Knife, S-T-A-K-E-K-N-I-F-E. You'll be interested in this. He was the head of the IRA's Intelligent Internal Security Unit that was responsible for weeding out informers and murdering them. And he was a government agent himself. So it was the highest level of infiltration. And you said about animal rights activists marrying their partners and having children to infiltrate deep into the movement. This guy was actually, they were nicknamed the Nutting Squad, because when they found you out, if you were informer, you were tortured and then you were shot in the head and then dumped in a lane somewhere. But he was also operating as a British government agent. So the lengths that these deep undercover people will go to, and the amount of deception that they're capable for cannot be underestimated. And I think that's what we're highlighting here as well. Just do not take people at face value. You need to be really careful about who you follow and trust, and take everything with a pinch of salt, question everything. I don't think that's a bad strategy, is it, Francis?
No, I mean, I was thinking even when in 2020 we had the lockdowns, and in the UK we had a couple of parliamentarians speaking out. So you had these MPs, Charles Walker and Desmond Swain, and the other people who spoke out were Peter Hitchens.
Christopher Chope as well. He stood up in Parliament 2 years ago. One of the first videos I ever put on Twitter. He triggered me. He was the first person to question Matt Hancock about the stats and the figures for people that died within 14 days of taking a jab. And he was dismissed in Parliament, say, I haven't got those figures. I'll get back to you. He's never mentioned these days either.
Well, he's actually doing, he's still speaking out for the vaccine injured, but the point I was going to make was there was the people I just mentioned and Jonathan Sumption, and they spoke out, and everyone thought, oh, we've got these kind of guys who are verbalizing what we feel, like the lockdowns are wrong, they're illogical, they don't work. All of them caved to the vaccine, right?
Yeah.
All of that, and in a short space of time, they all went like dominoes. It was kind of a dismal week. You know, it was Peter Hitchens, it was Desmond Swain, and Desmond Swain was pictured looking like a hostage. He's like a knight of the realm who's usually really dapper and well-presented and speaks, you know, have all these articulate speeches in Parliament. Charles Walker actually didn't take the vaccine, but he said that he would get it if it's a nasal spray or a tablet the following year because he was scared of needles. And Jonathan Sumption, who had been this eloquent, you know, justice of the Supreme Court or whatever it is, he was talking about the notions of freedom and liberty on which the nation was founded. And then in early 2021, he argues in favor of a vaccine vaccine passports. And he did later, a few months later, like once the damage is done, recant that. But it just, I mean, again, people, it's very, as you say, we have to be aware that there are levels of infiltration. We have to be aware that these people are not necessarily on our side. And we have to look at all of them with suspicion, given the levels of infiltration you just spoke about. But it doesn't mean that they all are, because people are illogical and contradictory. But the fact that these people normalize, like Peter Hitchens wrote an article normalizing acquiescence to vaccinations that he didn't want for travel purposes, you know, and he was one of the, it's almost like they gained your trust and then used it to influence people to for the ultimate goal, which was to get, in my opinion, was to get people to take the jabs.
Yeah, interestingly, let me just, because when you mentioned Hitchens, right at the beginning of all this, which was, just over 3 years ago, and I remember being sent home to work from a government job, I was on my sofa every day, I was listening to talk radio, I didn't know about any alternate radio stations, and once a week he was on talk radio with Mike Graham, he got half an hour, and at the very beginning I thought, he's speaking very powerfully against lockdowns, they're damaging, etc., etc., and then as you rightly say, he caved in when it came to the vaccine. Now, let me add this. It's not the fact that he got vaccinated per se that I had an issue with, because his reasoning was that he had family that he wanted to see. He couldn't travel without it. He wasn't going to die without visiting his family, etc. That's a personal choice. But then what he did immediately, Francis, that struck me and sent every alarm bell warning with me, is he then more or less poured cold water on anyone else that was resisting, more or less saying, look, resistance is futile. You might as well just take your jab. Nobody's going to be able to do anything without it. I don't want to do this, but you're crazy if you think that you're going to make a stand and this is going to all blow over. It was the fact that he tried to demoralize the people that did continue to take the stance. That's what set the alarm bells off for me, rather than I'm just getting injected. Because let's face it, that is a personal choice. But it's the fact that he tried to discourage you and I, saying you're wasting your time, guys. This is a foregone conclusion. To me, that was the damage that he was doing.
Yeah, that's very much the point I was making, because it made it look like the arrangement was permanent. He made it look like you're never going to be able to travel again. I want to see my family in Germany.
Yes.
So I'm never going to be able to travel again. Well, actually, as we know, those of us stuck, actually at the time you could still travel. I mean, if you maybe had to take a test or people, but actually some people like Dolores Cahill were arguing that you just assert your rights and get through. And I know people who traveled who didn't take the shot. So it was still possible if you were brave. But let's say it wasn't possible and they didn't let you through and you had to fight the fight. But even so, it's like you could just delay your seeing your family for 6 months for the sake of a principle. But he did make people demoralized and as though it was the end of your personal travel, which would have encouraged people to take it. But so wittingly or wittingly, that is something that he contributed to.
Yeah, and that was my wake-up call for him right off the bat. And then, of course, you had the like of Hartley Brewer, who was on talk radio, who spoke very, very vehemently against lockdowns, but was very, very pro-vaccine. And I think my take on all this, and I've said this before, is my plumb line for anybody, whether or not they're legit or not, whether I get it right or not, the plumb line is the vaccine and the promotion of taking the vaccine to restore liberty. If you want to take it as an individual, that's your choice. But to tell a group or an audience that this is the way forward, and if you don't do this, we're not going to get back to normal, and this is safe, and this is effective. If you're pushing it, if you're pimping it, that's when the red lights go off with me. Like if you told me today you were jabbed, I'm not going to fall out with you, but it's your business. But if you then come on and say, I'm jabbed and I believe everybody should be and it's safe and it's effective, then that's when, you know, we terminate our relationship because you're pushing something I believe to be negative. The pushing of the jab, Francis, is my own plumb line. And I think that's what you're alluding to with Hitchens there. You know, he was more or less pushing it.
Well, if you're, it's not, yeah, it is that. And he was, it's also because they took your trust in one direction. It's all about liberty. And then they almost caved at the first chance they had to resist and fight for liberty. And, but also with Hartley Brewer, it's an interesting example you use there because let's say people were slowly having misgivings about the BBC coverage or the mainstream coverage on the mainstream channels. They gravitated towards a talk radio for a different opinion because she's saying there's questions about lockdown. So again, she gains the trust, just like the MPs I just mentioned, like Pete Hitchens. And then when it comes to the lockdown, so when it comes to vaccinations, all that bullish questioning, all that kind of critical analysis, all that research that she was doing for lockdowns, where she was skewering the politicians and itemizing all the problems with lockdowns, disappeared. Complete acceptance of the vaccine. And not only that, she was on with Jeremy Brown of the Joint Committee for Vaccinations and Immunizations, whatever it's called, JCVI. She speaking to him, she allowed him to go unquestioned, saying that they were safe for pregnant women. And she actually said that herself in a couple of interviews. And he was just able to have free rein and say what he wanted without any of this critical questioning. And so she's highly questionable for that. And even some of her own tweets where she solicited responses for where can 20-somethings take the jab so they don't miss out on a summer holiday? Where can they take it early? So it's creating the sense that there was an urgency, that after post-lockdown, after 18 months of lockdown, you weren't going to be able to go on holiday, that the answers to where they could find it, find the jab in the vaccination centres would be in the tweets below. If she wanted to write a tweet that encouraged young people towards vaccination, she couldn't have worded it any better. There was a series of examples like this, but particularly encouraging where she says about there's dangers from COVID and pregnant women are going to be much safer if they have the roughly speaking, she says that you'd be better off having the vaccine. Can you explain why? And she asked this Professor Jeremy Brown just to speak. And even now, the UK government website says there's not enough evidence to safely recommend it for pregnant women. And yet she was doing so on talk radio.
Yeah, the pushing of that thing is the absolute plumb line, at least for me. And anybody that falls on the wrong side of that plumb line has proved themselves to be bad news from what I can gather. None of us are perfect and we don't have all the answers. But when it comes to, toxic injections into women and children and babies, etc., no, that's the plumb line for me. We've got to take a real quick break, Francis. A lot of people enjoying our chat. I'm looking at our live chat here. They're appreciating what you're saying. They're agreeing with what you're saying. So we'll be right back in 2 minutes here with Francis O'Neill. Please don't go away.
With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
What? It was a glitch. Forget about it. We New Yorkers recognize that the state is predominantly Democrat, but it's not completely Democrat. But you couldn't prove that by the voter registration cards that went out last week in Long Island's Nassau County. Voters there were stunned to discover that they were all Democrats, even though they'd been registered Republicans their entire lives. The glitch, which is being attributed to human error, affects not only Republicans, but also
conservative, and other third-party registrants. Nassau's county executive, Bruce Blakeman, said there's a lot of confusion. There's a lot of people emotionally upset about this. We believe this is an error on the part of the mailing house that the Board of Elections used. How come these glitches never go in the Republicans' favor? They always seem to favor the Democrats. Why is that? From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
They've been saying that 2 in 3 deaths on country roads are country people. We might not want to believe it or want to blame others, but think about that final high school year wind cheater. Hey, look at the names. There will be some who've died. Classmates, teammates, friends no longer here. We can't ignore it. 2 in 3 deaths on country roads are country people.
Think road safety. A message from the government of South Australia.
Let's be honest, and I mean this half sincerely. He is one white kitty cat away from being a James Bond villain.
He talks gibberish.
He's locked and loaded. Rick Munn on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Okay, we're coming into the final furlong here with Francis O'Neill. I'm enjoying the conversation. We're just shooting from the hip, chewing the fat, shooting the breeze, call it whatever you want, speaking frankly and openly, which is what it should be about. That's what this platform's for. It's to give people an unmessed with viewpoint that they can talk about and not really be slapped down or shut down by censorship, etc. We're talking about controlled opposition, how deep it can run, why you should be aware of it, the damage that it can do. Another chap, And again, I'm not doing this to have a pop at this person, but he's just another polarizing character that seems to have been doing the rounds over the last few years, is Jordan Peterson. Some people think the sun shines out of his ass. Other people think he's just a whinger and he should sit down and shut up and take a position on something and stick with it. He set up what he calls, like, it's almost like an alternative to the World Economic Forum, and there's a conference he's organizing, and somebody has done a little bit of research in that. It says it looks like a World Economic Forum conference. Speakers include Professor Arthur Brooks, Niall Ferguson, I'm not sure if that's Neil Ferguson from the UK or not, Bjorn Bloomberg, the former Australian Prime Ministers, Tony Abbott and John Howard, John Anderson, and various other senators, Canadian shadow cabinet ministers, a lot of people with WEF ties or ex-WEF ties. Peterson, you know, at one stage famously screamed, just shut up and take the damn vaccine. And, advocated for people to take it after his anti-authoritarian stance for a very, very long time. What a flip-flopper he is, eh?
It's very strange, isn't it? I mean, with all these people that we've mentioned so far on the show, they could all be innocent. Like, they could all be innocently, like, as we said, there's so many people in our lives who have, like, strange and contradictory opinions, as we do sometimes as well. Mm-hmm. And so you look at them. But things like that, if you set your stall up as a fount of wisdom, or however you want to phrase that, so an authority figure, and you're dispensing learning, and you're teaching on principles of liberty and freedom, and you can't, and he speaks a lot about the Russian and German writers, you know, like looking at tyranny of the past, and he speaks a lot about World War II and how easily the public can flip to the dark side, and every individual has the capacity in them for evil and for homicide and for being part of horrific events. And not to recognize it when it lands in your own doorstep, and then not only not to recognize it, but to participate in being on the wrong side of it, it's really difficult to understand. And I've actually always had a slight suspicion about him since one of his edicts is to tidy your room and get your own house in order before you can criticize the world, which is really helpful if you're the government, you know, up there, which is what everyone is doing. Basically, everyone's trying to live their lives, bring the kids up, get the job, you know, get your money in, feed everybody. And if you do that and concentrate on your own little sphere of influence, that allows free reign to the guys at the top. And not only that, he says that if you haven't got that in order, then you're not in a fit state to engage, right? Well, that's him. Yeah. He's on antidepressants. He's sick. He was addicted to benzodiazepine. He wrecked his health. He's been struggling through life, and he's some kind of manic workaholic, you know, so... He doesn't, and he seems to struggle with depression. He's always on the verge of tears. He speaks like he's that Kermit the Frog voice, where he's always about to break into tears. So he's not in a fit state to give advice. He's not in a fit state to go and organize conferences to say, none of them are. It's like, you know, everyone says to you, like, get on with your own life. You know, you can't chase the world. And yet they listen to the people like Bill Gates and Jordan Peterson, who then go about doing exactly that. You know, they say you can't fix all the world's problems, but they listen to people who try to, for who are unqualified in it, who are actually not even doing, I mean, I don't want to, again, hit someone when they're down or be unkind, but just on a very literal and logical sense, if Jordan Peterson can't even look after himself to the state where he's getting addicted to painkillers for his depression or whatever, then why should I listen to him when he's trying to rule the world?
Yeah, and this is an important point because, listen, I don't think anyone on the planet escaped some type of mental health issues over the last 3 years to a greater or a lesser degree. I think the campaign of terror and manipulation that was unleashed upon the planet has affected everybody negatively in some way, shape, or form. Some people cope better with certain stresses than others. Peterson, again, I don't know a lot about him, but there's a lot of contradictory stuff in there, which at the very least would suggest to me that I shouldn't place too much weight in what he's saying. And as you rightly pointed out, we're not kicking someone for having an addiction or for being down. And he may be an eminent psychologist or psychiatrist or psychoanalyst or whatever his job is, but it also shows that he's just a human being like everybody else. And I try and discourage people from putting too much weight in what I say, or even too much weight in what you might say or the writings that you have. Just read them, listen to us, and then if you can resonate with, you know, you and I, what we're saying, then listen some more. But if I come out with something, if I take suddenly a compliance stance, and people have been listening to this show for a year and a half, and they think, yeah, Rick, you're great, you're flying the flag for freedom, blah, 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 and then tomorrow I just have a breakdown, I literally have a mental breakdown, I say, listen, it's all garbage, we need to conform, we need to stop thinking about all this conspiracy, maybe I'm having a meltdown, and you absolutely shouldn't be listening to me. But that applies to me and you as well as every other figure. And I suppose what I'm saying is here, Francis, we're all humans. And yes, take guidance and inspiration from certain individuals, but please don't put too much weight in them, and don't follow them like the children after the Pied Piper, because you may never end up seeing your home again. You know, they could take you to the cleaners and back. We need to use a little bit of discernment is what I'm trying to say. And then take it from there. Is that a fair strategy?
Well, of course, I mean, we're all on some kind of learning curve, and we're all like in some kind of Plato's cave or whatever the cave is with the images on the wall. We can't see the whole picture all the time. And it may be that, you know, some of these people are trying to help us. And but it seems to me that if you, like in Peterson's case, he felt like the vaccine, I can't compute that he thought that was a clever thing to do, that you need to have a state mandated medication in order to move freely about the world. I can't compute that someone intelligent would think that was the logical solution. But let's say that that's what he thought. But then to advocate that to thousands or perhaps millions of followers, all I'd look at is that from my perception of the world is that the people who get amplified are generally not the people who are opposing the system. You tend to find that the people who are genuine opponents, like we mentioned before, Sukrit Bhakti, Mike Eden, Dolores Campbell, whoever spoke out early, who spoke out urgently against the key issues, like it's usually key issues like the vaccinations is a key issue, or in 20 years ago it was 9/11. If you speak, you don't gain personally or professionally. You lose. You're not featured on every mainstream media outlet. You're ignored. You don't exist. So that's another reason why I look at some of these figures with a bit of a critical eye. But it doesn't always follow, but it seems to me that it's a pretty good rule of thumb.
Yeah, wise words. And I mean, we're almost up to time here. There's a lot of other things that I would like to talk to you about today, but time is our enemy, my friend, not just the World Economic Forum and the globalists of this world. It's my old saying on here, time is also our enemy. I'm hoping, we're not just done yet, but I'm hoping maybe we can talk again in the not too distant future. There's a lot of other things that I wanted to talk to you about, delayed gratification. You wrote a piece on your Substack called Marshmallow. You wrote another piece called Outrage. Where is it? I'm thinking specifically about the revelations that are coming out that no, these things aren't safe and effective. There's massive increases in all-cause mortalities not linked to so-called COVID. They're scratching their heads. Where's the outrage? JFK was officially done away with in conjunction with the CIA. Where's the outrage? The Hancock shenanigans, the Twitter files, and on and on and on and on it goes. You would like to think that with all of this, there's been at least an arrest or there's been at least a trial going down. But no, there's nothing. And the public seems to be happy to keep typing and keep blowing off steam online in echo chambers. And in reality, the villains are still out there walking free and making money. Tony Blair, Clinton, Obama, you name it. We could spend an entire hour just naming people that have committed heinous crimes against humanity and are still running free, but we don't have an hour to do that. So I'd like to get into that with you again at some stage. Where's the outrage? Where's the arrests? Will we ever see them, or will we just happy to puff and blow about it online? So that's something for the future, maybe. What do you say?
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah, I mean, the quick answer would be because if you have a slow release of the truth, then it doesn't have the same shock value. So if you let people gradually get used to the idea of something shocking, are you still going on about that? There's a kind of a boredom, there's kind of a fatigue of hearing that same story. That's, say, for example, with JFK, and maybe that's what they're trying to do with the vaccines. It just becomes a part of your normal
everyday life. Desensitizing is slowly, as they do with horror. So listen, we're pretty much up to time, my friend. Please check out Francis' writings on the Substack. Francis O'Neill, all one word with two L's at the end. substack.com, and also check out his Twitter page at Francis X O'Neill, again with two L's. Francis, it's been an absolute blast. Pleasure talking to you, meeting you, and hopefully you won't be a stranger here. This is Rick Munn, Locked and Loaded. I'm off ski now. James Freeman's incoming. Don't go away. TNT Radio.